Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the AFC West Show. We're coming to you live here with the results of Week 5 and a look at the upcoming Week 6 in the NFL. As always, you can give us a call. We're live on the air. 646-668-8837 is the number to dial up and get a hold of us. Also, if you want, hit us up on Twitter at AFC West Show. We'll be monitoring that, watching for your comments and questions there. And tonight, I'm joined by the second half of the AFC West Show. Daryl, how are you doing tonight?
I am ready to go. Ready for week number 5. Or actually, week number 6. I'm 1 week behind because we missed last week.
Yeah, we did have a pressing engagement last week, and we're unable to be live, but we are back, and a lot to talk about since then. You know, we had had some interesting things happening when we last talked, and since then more interesting things are going on. You know, I got to ask you, are you making sure that you're working out in a clean gym and going to good doctors right now?
Well, yeah, there's nothing that isn't scary about getting a staph infection that just doesn't stop. Nobody wants to think about that. I mean, I heard it explained very succinctly the other day by a physician. I, as a non-physician, will probably butcher this, but I'll keep it very short. I guess we all have staph bacteria on our body, and it takes a cut, and then that can get in there, and usually our body deals with it. But apparently there are some mutated forms that are antibiotic resistant or difficult to treat, and Daniel Fells certainly is. We're happy to hear he's not going to lose his split, but he still has a long road coming to come back. So our thoughts are with him, and yes, I'm working out in a clean gym.
You know, it can be a death blow for teams that have staph infections at their facility. And most interestingly enough from this, now that the New York Health Department has stepped on this, has been the revelation that he had been given some cortisone shots or some pain relief shots. And now they're checking the integrity of the needle and the area in the locker room where he was given these injections. So certainly a scary thing, as you say. I know that, anytime that you have something like that, you definitely wish for the best. Fells, the reason why we do bring him up, former Broncos, so he has some AFC West ties, currently now, of course, with the New York Giants. But, it's something to keep in mind. And, you know, we had some games last week as well.
Yeah, we sure did, and a lot came out of that, I'll tell you. Some hopes were dashed, some were raised, and it was an up-and-down battle. So let's talk a little bit about that, Darren. We'll come to the divisional game in a minute, but let's start with Chicago at Kansas City. What happened there?
Well, you know, Kansas City actually looked like they had this game in control, a 17-3 lead. And, unfortunately then the unthinkable happened. Jamaal Charles left with a knee injury at that time is all it was called. But from there, it started to spiral downhill. The Chicago Bears ended up winning the game by a score of 18-17. Matt Forte was 71 yards, and Jay Cutler, he was solid on the game. He ended up with 252 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. So that was the story of the game. The bad news that came out of it is Jamal Charles with his torn ACL.
Yeah, that is tragic. I mean, that's a huge loss for Kansas City, and will set them back. I think one thing that I'd like to point out in that game is that it seemed like the Bears had folded and were ready to kind of call it a season, but they have won their last two games and they're moving forward. And that was a great little dump off play by Cutler to Forte to secure the victory there. And it's a shame for Kansas City. So 1-4 they are. We'll talk about them in a minute. I want to move on to Denver versus Oakland, the AFC West divisional game. And Oakland thought that they could maybe catch Denver here, that they had improved, and they were kind of the surprise team. And I'd say they still are certainly in the AFC West and maybe across the NFL. We'll talk more about that in detail shortly. But, Darren, what happened in that game?
You know, I think a lot of Denver fans were on pins and needles for a good portion of that game, although the Raiders never got a big lead. Going into the locker room 7-3 after intercepting Peyton Manning in the end zone on what looked like a sure opportunity for the Broncos to move ahead and go into the locker room at the half, the Raiders were feeling confident. Jack Del Rio was very pleased with his team not allowing those points. You know, the second half, the Broncos were able to score a pair of field goals. We had to miss Sebastian Janikowski field goals, which are almost unheard of. And finally, a big-time pick six in the fourth quarter by Chris Harris Jr., where he ran it back for a 70-plus yard INT for the touchdown. With that, that was the story. Latavius Murray was held to 39 yards. They went away from him in the second half with Olawale getting the majority of the carries, and he only ended up with 13 yards, and he got six in the second half. So the Denver defense, you know, really held the Oakland rushing game down, and aside from a couple of long passes, you had a 33-yarder to Wofford, and also then you had a 25-yarder to Crabtree. Overall, Oakland was fairly quiet for the majority of the game.
Well, both teams struggled on offense, and I think the Oakland offense has matured significantly from last year. Derek Carr has moved up. That Broncos defense is tenacious and really tough. Two big turnovers that were very pivotal on the game, and I think you could understand why they might have struggled. Now, some people might have been surprised at the Broncos' lack of success, but the defense in Oakland, it played much better than what it has statistically in certain areas, and it does have a stout rush defense. So in some ways, they're well-prepared to keep growing. People are asking around the NFL about Peyton Manning, and that's a great question. He didn't look good. The offense didn't score a touchdown, so that was very disappointing for Bronco fans. But it was a victory, and a tight-fought victory. You're right, a lot of people holding their breath. Monday night brought us Pittsburgh at San Diego, and San Diego, we've talked about them potentially moving. That's nothing new for fans of the NFL, but, you know, there's yellow and there's blue here in San Diego, but I think there was a lot more yellow and black on Monday night than yellow and blue, at least from what I've heard from players in San Diego. And that game was pretty exciting, Darren. It came down to the last minute. In the last minute, who won?
Well, you know, unfortunately, there were a lot more towels there than there were bolts, and that tells you something when both teams have yellow. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, last second, a very gutsy call by Mike Tomlin. 24-20 was the final score. 5 seconds remaining. They went with a handoff from the wild, or a wildcat snap, not even really a handoff, to Le'Veon Bell, who scampers in, gets the touchdown on the second effort, and clock expires, game over, 24-20. Amazing game, being that Michael Vick was silent for the majority of the game, came up big in the fourth quarter with a huge scamper, actually, on third down and long for Pittsburgh. I believe it was around a 24-yard run he had. Third and long, gets him up into field goal range. Then they end up with 16 seconds, throwing to Heath Miller, getting down to the one with a penalty or half-yard line then. And amazing game. Phillip Rivers said after the game that it was like playing a away game. The crowd was so noisy and so much behind Steelers.
Yeah, and I think everybody was shocked that, well, first of all, a lot of things went on. The clock ran down an extra 18 seconds. The Pittsburgh team did not, well, the Steelers did not have to call a timeout because of a penalty that occurred. And then finally they took a play that a lot of people felt, why the hell don't you have Michael Vick roll out and either throw it away and have some margin of safety there? But it worked out, and it's like a walk-off home run. It's just a brutal, crushing experience. So San Diego is left to kind of see what they can do. We talked about their injuries the week before this last, and it's no different. They still are struggling with those. So let's talk a little bit more about each of the teams, Darren, and see what we can share about what's going on in each of the places. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start off with the Raiders. You know, they have a great time for a bye week. Luckily, they are going to be taking the week off. They're needing to do that with Justin Tuck suffering from a shoulder injury. Along with that, Derek Carr had a rough game against the Broncos. Got a little dinged up, nothing significant, though. But he did admit to some soreness after that game. So it's going to give the Oakland Raiders a chance to kind of rest and recuperate. Along with that, they are able to take what they've worked on. And according to Jack Del Rio, they're going to go ahead and now put in some more plays and more kinks into this offense to really start expanding. He's very pleased with what Derek Carr has been able to do, and he thinks that it's now time to go ahead and continue to expand on that.
Well, and the bye week will help with that, so I think that's an interesting thing. We'll see how it goes. I know that the feelings weren't great when Del Rio left Denver, and it seems like his team's bought into him. I know in Denver for the first few years they did, so we'll see if it's a long-term thing or not, but certainly they're ahead of schedule. They have time to plan. I haven't yet analyzed the second half of their schedule. Maybe we should do that around week 8 or 9, but I think that they do have the upside more than a lot of teams, so it's an exciting time for Oakland. The one thing I'd say is their defense has certainly been keeping them in games and making it close. Their defense is 18th, so it's just a little below the middle. But interestingly enough, their offense was the big step up, and they've been playing very well. And Latavius Murray and Derek Carr are part of that, along with Amani Cooper, and they're actually the 9th ranked offense in the NFL.
You know, really quickly, they will be also allowing Latavius Murray a little chance to rest. He got benched in the second half of the last two games, and they didn't call it benching. He has a sore shoulder that he's working through. But it will give a chance to rest, because they do have, you mentioned the schedule, they do have some brutal games coming up. Just really quickly, the Chargers, Jets, Steelers, Vikings, Lions, Titans, Chiefs, Broncos, Packers. So no walkovers in there. On those, they're at the Titans, at the Lions. So those two teams that have losing records right now, but those both will be on the road.
And that'll pose a challenge for them, no doubt about it. How about we move on and take a look at the Kansas City Chiefs? We know the big news is not really news anymore. Jamaal Charles is out with a torn ACL, Darren.
You know he is, and Adrian Peterson reached out to Jamaal Charles and said that he's going to go ahead and ask Jamaal Charles to rehab and to work out with him over next off season. But I think it's a little early for Jamaal Charles to think about that. You know, in the meantime, they're going to have to turn to Shashkandrick West, who will inherit the feature role from from Jamal Charles and see what he can do to keep them alive. You know, their coach, Andy Reid, we talked about this a little bit. He is saying that this team doesn't have heart. So something that that he's trying to motivate them, light a fire. If they don't get heart, you know, I wonder how many more years they will give Andy Reid.
I think he's got a little more room there. You're right about the heart, I understand, but it was a bruising game against Denver, and I don't know that that's a fair assessment. And then they had to go in and play Green Bay. That's tough, but you're right. The Chiefs are in a very free fall form. Nobody expected that. We both picked them to be much higher. As a matter of fact, I'm slotting the Chiefs right now for the Raiders slot, and I'm going to take the Raiders card out, and I'm going to put it right up in that Chiefs slot because, frankly, I know that San Diego should be a better team than what it is, but the Raiders have played, I think, better in these five games than San Diego has. And so if I really had to put a wager on one of these teams, I probably would still put it on San Diego for now, but I'm darn tempted to put it on Oakland because of the way they played.
You know, I would have to agree with you, and you mentioned the Chargers. What can you tell me out of San Diego after that bitter defeat to the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Well, it was tough. I mean, that field goal going in from Josh Lambeau and the belief by the Chargers that they had won that game. And then you mentioned the Michael Vick scamper that really made a difference. There were a couple of key plays. One was the Marcus Wheaton reception, and the other was that Michael Vick scamper. And I guess you could throw in the last play of the game, the touchdown, because, gosh, he only made that by a few inches, so that was pretty tight. There's a lot of injury going on. The injury bug has bit San Diego for the last few weeks. And then last year, too, many teams go through this. But for them, it's been really brutal on the offensive line. And so King Dunlap has a concussion, and Chris Watt has a concussion. And DJ Fluker, I don't believe, practiced today or was limited. So they have a lot of offensive line problems, and not to mention some of their – defensive play, and we'll talk about that more. I think you might have something to say about that. But Antonio Gates is back, and Darren, how did he look to you?
Well, you know, he came back with a vengeance after that four-year steroid or PED suspension. You know, so he came back strong. Two TDs. He hit that magical 100 touchdown reception, followed up with his 101st. So great story for him coming back big. And at the same time, Ladarius Green, who shined in Antonio Gates' absence, was a good target as well for Phillip Rivers. So this is something that now that they're getting all their offensive weapons on the receiving game in, my question is Malcolm Gordon, who ended up with only 52 yards between him and Danny Woodhead, against the Steelers, are these running backs going to get going to make it a well-rounded offense?
You know, that's a big question. Danny, they've played the dump-off game very well, and that was a lot of what they did with Pittsburgh, and that's important. You got to play towards your strengths and do what you can. I think the question is, how long can that work against a good defense? If you remember, people think of Pittsburgh as having a great defense, but remember that first game against Rob Gronkowski? That defense actually allowed Gronkowski to go out there and line up all alone with nobody there and proceed to score three touchdowns in that first game. So I think that defense has gotten better, but it still has a lot of holes. And they actually San Diego was unable to really exploit that defense. So I think that's a big problem. So going to Green Bay is going to be a huge problem for San Diego, and we'll come back and focus on that in a minute. I'm going to flip it back over to you, Darren, and we know that they need to get an offensive line going. What's going on with their defense? How do they rank, and what do you see as their defensive problem?
you know, their defense is allowing points of 32.8. They're 30th in the league. Here's the one issue. If you watch the game at all, Jason Verrett held Antonio Brown pretty much receptionless. But on the other side, Brandon Flowers looked like an old man out there. Also, along with that, they were giving up. You know, they were just not stopping Le'Veon Bell. He ended up with 111 yards. He was getting through the first line, back to the second line. They created a fumble, but didn't recover it. So they did create that. But overall, they were a team that they just looked a little bit sluggish out there. And you could see that they did not have that front line that was stopping people. Now, granted, Manti Te'o missed today's practice with an injury, so it makes you wonder what kind of injury effect that had on the game. But for the whole game on Monday night, they only had 6 quarterback hits, which is something that when you're playing a aged Michael Vick, you need to get a little bit more pressure, a little more stop up front if they're going to go ahead and be able to really slow down some of these offensive firepowers that they have yet to play, including the Green Bay Packers.
And you're right. And so I think where I started going before I got sidetracked looking at that defense is that they thought they could exploit it. But in reality, they thought they found a weak area in that mid-range. They just couldn't quite exploit the longer passes that they thought they could. And so with Malcolm with Gordon there, they had a Melvin Gordon. I don't know if they trusted him as much. I don't think he's running badly, but I do believe the offensive line being in shambles causes problems for him. And the other part is that they really thought they could pass a little more against the Steeler defense. And they did have some great screen plays and short plays that turned into big gains. But overall, some big mistakes. And you pointed out the defense. That's going to be a huge issue for the Chargers. I mean, the Chargers right now, their defense is the 30th defense in the NFL. So their offense is a whole hell of a lot better at 23rd. So we got to see some more or better defense, and we've got to see some more output from the offense. I want to move to Denver. I know we're running short on time. We've got a lot to cover. The Denver defense is dominant. Nobody's surprised about that after the first few weeks, unless you are living in a cave. So they have a 15.8 points per game against, and that's the second in the NFL. I believe the Jets are the only team with a better points per game average. The offense, though, Darren, I don't know. I've got nothing on that offense. Or maybe I've got everything. Well, what do you think?
You know, the passing game, 33rd in the league, rushing game, 30th, and a lot's been said about is Peyton Manning done with or – You know, is it Kubiak system? Do they have to give the aging quarterback something? You know, I think as much as I question the skill and proper usage of John Elway under Dan Reeves, he really hit it on the head when he mentioned that when John Elway did get old, they moved him back to the shotgun because that's what he was comfortable in, and they went that way consistently. That's what he had always enjoyed when he struggled or had issues. So they did that for him, and that extended his career. Granted, they did have a great running back in Terrell Davis, but at the same time, you know, Peyton Manning is accustomed to the shotgun. They have a very young offensive line. I just have to think that at some point this offensive line is going to be able to finally start to get their groove together and allow some – more runs out of the shotgun and out of the pistol that right now they've been running here and there with Peyton Manning.
Yeah, and the only comment I have to add to that is that the Denver Broncos had an offensive line that actually was extremely talented at that time and had several Pro Bowlers on it throughout, if not just Pro Bowlers, actually some Hall of Famers. So I think Schlereth is in line to maybe go in. We know that Zimmerman is in, Tony Jones, some of those guys. And then you had some other Hall of Famers and people that were perennial Pro Bowlers there. And our offensive line right now doesn't have that. So I don't know that I can see them totally mix, but I understand the concept, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. You mentioned the Denver's, again, really struggling both on running and throwing the ball, and so where do you go from there? And I guess where we go from there is you take solace in the defense and know that the defense is the strongest in the NFL by far, and as a matter of fact, it's not even close. It's not a neck-and-neck race. St. Louis has the second-best defense statistically, and they're heads and tails behind Denver. So living on defense and trying to find the offense. So we'll find out what happens. Darren, should we go to the games for this weekend and see what we have going on? Or are you ready to pick, or do you have any more prognostications?
You know, I have my my game board set up here, and my prognostications are ready. It's got my my Nostradamus hat on, and I think that let's start off with Kansas City at Minnesota game. And you know, I like Minnesota in this game. I'm going to say that they will win by 7. I just feel that you know, they were able to run against the Chargers. They were able to slow down the offense, a Kansas City offense that is only scored 2 or 3 touchdowns to receivers this game. And without a Jamal Charles, watch out in Minnesota. Minnesota, the Purple People Eaters by 7.
They, you know, Minnesota has a pretty good defense, and they look good. Adrian Peterson is a load to stop, and I'm not sure that Kansas City is up to that, because I haven't seen them play a really good running team. I do know they're going to get some pressure on Teddy Bridgewater. The good thing for Minnesota is that Teddy Bridgewater tends to be kind of mobile and can make plays on his feet if he has to, a la Russell Wilson, maybe not quite at the same level, but he's budding and developing. I'm going to go with Minnesota as well. I'm going to say Minnesota can win this game by 5. If I was to have to put money or shillings on the table, I'd say 5 points for Minnesota.
San Diego at Green Bay. Well, this one, I have Green Bay by 14. Green Bay is favored by 11.5. I think they'll cover the spread. Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the league. If Eddie Lacy is healthy throughout the game, which he should be, you might as well count him for at least 80 yards on the ground. No stopping him, San Diego. I'm sorry, you're traveling back east. Better luck next time.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game. What I would do if I were you, San Diego fans, is find the biggest Green Bay fan, the one that is the most pumped up and will give you the highest spread, and put your money against that, because I'm only saying by 7. I do think that San Diego has pride, but we'll see who's healthy and who's not. It's early. We're still 4 days away, so that's really hard to tell, saying that it's going to be tough for that to happen. As a victory for San Diego, I got 7-point Green Bay win. So I know that we're going to be coming up against the deadline here. We've got the Raiders with a bye week, Darren, so we don't have to pick them. Should we wait until after the buzzer, or should we go ahead and dump Denver out and Cleveland?
Go ahead and tell me your prognostication.
Well, we have Denver 5-0 that's traveling to Cleveland, and that's always an issue. So I think that does mean that you should pay attention to that. But, again, you can't count Cleveland out. They've played really well. Josh McCown's had a couple of 300- and 400-yard games. He's going to throw the ball all over the yard, but that Denver defense is really strong. So I think the question is, what's going to happen there? And I know that we're coming up. So, Darren, should we go to the break there, or do you want to add a little more suspense to this whole thing?
Let's take a break. Follow us at AFC West Show. We'll be back with the pick after this. And we're back with the picks. So we've got one last game, Daryl. It was almost his pick when he got stalled up by the bumper music. Well, Daryl, who's going to win the game?
Well, again, you'd want to say that this is going to be a big game for one or the other, and it's a big game for both. But in reality, I would be shocked if Denver lost this game. I'm going to say that Denver will pull this out by actually 7 points. Or I'm sorry, 5 points. 7 points. I can't read there. 7 points. And the reason why I say that is people that are fans of Denver would like them to really get that run game going, get the throwing game going. But you've got to look at it incrementally, and I haven't seen it. So I haven't seen this Cleveland defense be terrible. I've seen them make mistakes. The offense hasn't been abysmal. I've seen them make mistakes. And so I see Denver going to the Midwest and playing a tough fought game, but coming out by 7 points. And hopefully for Denver fans, they'll see a little improvement in the run game. And we'll see how the offensive line does. But those are things I'm going to look for. Denver by 7.
Well, you know, that's an interesting pick. It's an early morning game, so expect Denver to start out slow. That's one area that I think that most of the West Coast teams have gotten accustomed to with their teams when they travel to the East. That being said, McGlown ended up with, I believe, 430-some-odd yards last week passing, with Aqib Talib currently in a walking boot. And Chris Harris Jr., Bradley Roby being the starters if Talib is unavailable. You know, I still think that's going to be a tougher job for McGlown, especially with a Denver pass rush. And the amazing thing has been, even with DeMarcus Ware going out with his injury last game, the Broncos were still able to get some good pressure against a decent Oakland offensive line. I believe that, you know, we haven't seen a Denver team either get a lead. So if Denver can get a 7-10-point lead and this defense is allowed to pin their ears back even more, it could become a real long day for a young team that doesn't have a lot of weapons in the running back area. If they're forced to throw a lot, it could definitely become a long afternoon for Cleveland. I think, though, that you know, this team wants to win. I think Denver, with a couple of missing players on the defense, would win this, but by 6, we'll say.
All right, we're not that far apart. So the last thing I want to leave everybody with is, living in San Diego, we have an opportunity to listen to the local San Diego media, and they obviously focus on the Chargers. And so yesterday, or was it today? It was today. I was struck by a local radio host, Jeff Dodseth, who feels that the Chargers no doubt will win next week against the Green Bay Packers. And his rationale for this is that the Chargers in 10 years win the games they should that they should lose and lose the games they should win. And so he's flipping everything over and deciding how things will be based on that. I don't know, Darren. I'm not going to Vegas on that. But going back to the Chargers, they have a lot of good things going. It's just a tough call for them to go there. Anything that you think could be surprising or maybe shift that game a little bit more? Because I know that's kind of the surprise team to be floundering.
You know, the only thing I can say is that if Aaron Rodgers ends up with a cold or the flu on Saturday and ends up missing the game, then we might be able to talk about that prediction coming true. Otherwise, I just don't see it happening. The talent level on Green Bay is what several teams they aspire to live up to that, and very few, you know, if you had to come down to in the top 10 quarterbacks in the league, I guess you could probably say that Philip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers both are, but Aaron Rodgers is a step above, and Mike McCoy, hate to say this, but you know what? If you want a great team that can't win the big game, get Mike McCoy as your head coach, and you'll have that. He's too conservative. He does not inspire his players. He doesn't get them to the level they need to be to win the big game. This loss will be on Mike McCoy and the San Diego Chargers.
All right, that's pretty definitive, I guess. So I guess you don't see visions of Brandon Flowers intercepting a lot of Aaron Rodgers' passes. You don't see Eric Weddle making the big play. Maybe Jason Verrett can make the plays as long as he's healthy, but you just don't see that defense being able to hold up. Is that correct, Aaron?
Last I checked, Eric Hu, I think that he doesn't even call the plays anymore in San Diego. A fall from grace he has had, and I don't expect him to be with the team next year, so it's kind of a swan song for Eric Weddle. But, you know, Brandon Flowers, I don't see him doing much. You know, looking down the list, maybe Daryl Stuckey will come up with a big play and turn the tide for them.
All right, Darren, I guess that will be it for this week. Going into week number 6, and AFC West fans, enjoy the weekend. We've got a fun weekend coming up, unless you're a Raiders fan, and then it's a get-healthy weekend. Make sure that you have your own fun, I guess. Darren, I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm going to say goodnight, and we'll look forward to seeing you next weekend.
Follow us on Twitter, at AFC West Show. Be sure and hit up the podcast, listen to past episodes. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to us on Twitter. We watch that, we monitor, and we respond. So looking forward to hearing from all of you out there. Thanks for listening, and good night.